Hello, my name is Andreina.
And my name is Gabriela, and this is Wigs and Candles,
a podcast about two sisters and their obsession with period film.
Join us on a trip through palaces and manors, balls and tea parties, and a lot of dresses, carriages, and of course, wigs and candles.
In this episode, Emily. So, Gabby, today we are discussing a movie that got us really excited from the moment it came out last fall.
Yes, Nene. We got very curious as soon as we saw the trailer. And it's a relatively new film, as you mentioned. It came in fall 2022. And I just watched it now on a very rainy April morning. And somehow it was the perfect mood for it. How about you?
Yeah, I was lucky to watch the movie at the Vancouver Film Festival, which happens September, October here in Vancouver. So I was lucky that I could see it in the movie theaters as part of the festival, and that always makes it a little bit more exciting and special because you watch it with a crowd of film-loving people. But then I watched it yesterday again for the podcast, and it was also a rainy, cloudy day here, and it was kind of perfect as well. I'm so excited to talk about it.
Yes, me too.
Yeah. So now before we start, as always, can you give us some facts about the movie, Gabby?
Sure, Nene. Emily came out in 2022 and is a biographical drama film from Great Britain, which was written and directed by Frances O'Connor. Frances O'Connor, and I make a little pause here to talk a little bit about the director. Frances O'Connor is an actress, and we know her from very good films. And just to mention a few, she has been in Mansfield Park and AI, Artificial Intelligence. So this is her debut as director, which is pretty amazing, and also as screenplay writer.
Wow.
It is a part fictional portrait of Emily Bronte. Emily Bronte is, as we may know, one of the Bronte sisters or Bronte siblings. And she's, of course, very famous for having written Wuthering Heights. So the film focuses on her life as a writer. The role of Emily is played by Emma Mackey, who we know from the series Sex Education and from, just to mention another film, Death on the Nile. So also relatively young actress with a very bright future. It also starts the actor Oliver Jackson Cohen as William Waitman, the vicar of the village, Fionn Whitehead as the brother, Bramwell Bronte, and the two other sisters of Emily are played by Alexandra Dowling as Charlotte and Amelia Gitting as the younger sister, Anne, just to mention a few of the cast. The film premiered at the 2022 Toronto International Film Festival. So it's a pretty new film. And while researching for the film, I found a very nice piece of trivia that I would like to share with you. The director, as we mentioned, Frances, is an actress herself. So she found it very important to allow the actors and actresses to bond prior to start recording. So she put them, all of them, for 2 weeks in a house to live together for them to start rehearsing and to get into character and to build the bond that they will need to play the roles, which I found was a very nice touch from her. So that's the most important, those are the most important facts on the film, Nene. Would you like to summarize the plot shortly for us?
Sure, Gabby. Thank you for those facts. I find it really interesting that they had those 2 weeks to practice. And I think it kind of works. You can see Yeah, you can kind of see that in the movie, how well all the actors work together. Yeah, but just to give a very short summary of the plot of the of the movie, Emily tells the story of a young Emily Bronte. Emily is passionate and free-spirited, with an imagination too big for her town and the expectations of her father, who wishes for her to become a teacher like her sister Charlotte. In her search for understanding of her own desires, Emily will experience joy, fear, confusion, and love, all of which will later appear in her one and only novel, Wuthering Heights. That's a short summary of the plot of the movie. A lot happens, of course, but this is pretty much, you know, what happens without spoiling. But as always, we recommend that you watch the movie and then come listen to the podcast, because there will be spoilers. So this is your moment to stop, go watch, and then come back. All right. So Gabby, I am so ready to talk about this movie. There's so much to talk about. There's so much I loved about it. And it pretty much touches on every single topic that is important for us as part of doing this podcast and as part of our obsession with period films. What we often talk about in our podcast series is how a film gives us a peek in the life of women in other times. So obviously this is another one where we're seeing the life of a historical character, historical literary character. So how did you find the portrayal of the Bronte sisters, and in particular of Emily Bronte, in this movie?
Nene, I was, of course, very impacted, I would say, like shaken, because I knew very little. I mean, I knew very superficially about the Bronte sisters and who had written what, but actually nothing more about their lives. And of course, even less about Emily Bronte herself. So I think it was very peculiar how the director and how Frances O'Connor got behind her words to figure out her personality and what she was going through. So she, I assume, maybe I'm speculating, she built up the character of Emily Bronte by looking behind her poetry and her words, because there's very little known about Emily Bronte. Mm-hmm. And while doing research, I read, and certainly you also came across that, the few things that are deliberate about Emily herself are things that her sister Charlotte wrote down and gave away. Yeah. So it is really fascinating. And of course, we can imagine that most of it is fictional and is the interpretation of Frances O'Connor. But nevertheless, it fits so well to the results of her work, how she must have been and how she must have felt. And of course, just how you introduced the question and the discussion, this glimpse on the life of a woman in the 19th century, again, a person who is conflicted by expectations and own desires. And I guess you pretty much saw the same, you know, this wanting to be an artist and being conflicted. I guess you know that better than anybody. How about you? How did you find that?
I cannot hide it. I really love this movie. I'm going to go out and say it right away. I really enjoyed it. And like you said, in the when you were talking about the facts and also how the movie came to be, and just now in your answer, it is highly fictionalized. It's a highly fictionalized portrayal of Emily Bronte. And we are not saying this. The writer, the Frances O'Connor, she has said so as well. She let her imagination inform a lot of the script. But I agree with you as well that the result is very coherent. It's like very...
That's the right word.
Yeah, it's very coherent. It's very believable. You can understand this person. Like, even if it's, you know, even if this Emily in this particular film is made of, you know, inference and using just the few biographical references that we have, which, like you said as well, come kind of third hand as well. Nothing is coming directly from her. What historians of the Brontes know and have explained is that Charlotte, after Emily died, she took on the work of kind of not cleaning up, but sort of creating a persona for Emily that would fit better with the conventions of the time. So what we have, what has come down to us and to Frances O'Connor is a lot of that. So whatever she filled in kind of to build the interior life of Emily worked very well. She's a very well-rounded character. She's an unforgettable character. She's a compelling woman. She's wonderful to look at and to listen to. And it is well done. It's very well written. And obviously the performance by, I'm sorry, I forget the
name. Emma Mackey.
Oh my goodness. It's brilliant. Yeah. So I really find it compelling, interesting, coherent, and believable and plausible. Like it's
plausible, exactly. I haven't read Wuthering Heights, I have to admit this sin. but knowing what it is about and knowing the heaviness of the novel and of the tone of the book, it matches very well to the personality that Frances O'Connor developed for Emily Brontë. Yeah, how she imagined her, what she had been through, and of course these touches of what is talking about a lot in the film, that she was rather odd, not really conventional, that she was kind of a little bit out of the ordinary.
Yeah,
and for us, maybe being out of the ordinary is. Today is ordinary. We are going through a time where we are celebrating diversity and celebrating creativity. Yeah. But of course, back then in Victorian times, it was very unusual. And at the same time, I find it still so fascinating, this conflict that she had of wanting to write and wanting to express herself, because she had a lot in her mind to express, that she was so conflicted by the expectations of her family. Her father wanted her to be a teacher and be a nice girl. And she plays that very well. That she really wants it, but she can't. That she cannot deny her artist soul. She cannot deny her artist soul and desire of conveying her thoughts.
I mean, that is the central topic of the movie. The central subject matter of the movie is Emily's conflict between what is expected of her and what she is inclined to do. Her inclination is to be an artist, very much in every sense. You know, her imagination is so boundless. She has this game with her younger sister, and this is fact. When they were little, Anne and Emily, they will write these long stories full of characters that they kept going for years and years and years. And this is shown a little bit in the movie when they meet again, one of them comes back. And, you know, when they greet each other as characters from this long series that they are, you know, that they are always creating in their minds. So her imagination is so powerful and untamable. It's like she seems to live more in her imaginary world than in the real world. So the conflict is very much about how can she tame this imaginary world and carry on with, you know, daily life. And the movie is very romantic also in every sense, in that Emily and her siblings, all of them go through different ways of experiencing the world around them. But for Emily and her older brother, Bramwell, who's a very important character in the movie. All of them are very important, but Bramwell is a particularly important character because they get along very well. He's also an artist accepted in the Royal Academy of Arts. So he's also kind of like the one who gives her permission to think about what being a writer means. He's kind of the one who can listen to her where she can be herself fully. But there's something about how they experience the moors, the landscape around them. That's very indicative of the inner world that they have. Like the moors, which is the most famous part of England, thanks to the Bronte sisters, right? The wind.
Export.
Yeah, it's in the imagination of readers around the world, this place that is barren and windy and where weather is like omnipresent becomes kind of like a reflection of the inner world of Emily. And this is very well done in the movie. But yeah, her conflict is how to tame her imagination, how to tame.
Yes, her creativity.
How to handle it, because it seems to be stronger than her all the time.
Yes, and she really puts an effort on keeping, but she can't. And as you said, it's very well done. And I think what they also achieved very well is this kind of, I would call it like, solar system. Uh-huh. You know, it's Emily, and you see this all these characters around her, and how she feels either more attracted or more distance from the others. Yeah, especially between the siblings, because it is really extraordinary. As I said, I didn't know much about them, and it's so extraordinary to see the dynamics between Emily and Charlotte, ooh, the eldest sister, and how much of a rivalry was between them. Then we see, because Charlotte was in her thoughts very different from Emily.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what puzzled me the most, I mean, even though we know this is fictional, but of course it threw the question in my head, even though we know that Charlotte herself was an extremely talented writer, she is the writer of Jane Eyre, which is an amazing piece of literature. And still she was so irritated by the oddness of Emily. She couldn't really cope with that herself. Mm. So then we have this dynamic between Emily and her little sister, Charlotte. And then we see the dynamic of Emily with Bramwell, which you mentioned is one of the most important characters in the story, because they are on the safe wavelengths, and they share this need and this thirst for artistic expression.
Yeah.
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 And then with her youngest sister, Anne, she has a complete different level, that she goes into the imagination, into the fantasy world. So I think it's very well done how she played with this influences of the closest relatives, and how consequent and how true to her self she stayed through the entire story. I think it's one of the best character developments I've seen on screen.
Wow. I you know, I have to agree. I think I thought you were gonna say it's one of the best sibling relationship I've seen portrayed. You said character, but also what a beautiful portrayal of siblings. And the Brontes,
well, that as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Brontes are famous for their being, you know, the sisters and the siblings. They are known for being this family of talented people that sadly died too young. Mm-hmm. So one of the things, I'm going to take it to a personal place right now, because I think one of the things that you and I love about period film, first of all, is one of the few genres that are mainly focused on women's lives and women's interior lives. It's a genre that, yeah, there are male characters, but it's usually centered around women. So we see each other there. And of course, a lot of these movies are book adaptations. And there's a lot of this, you know, the worlds of these women in, you know, the 19th century or the 18th century, you know, their lives were very small in the sense that their lives were inside their homes with their sisters and their brothers and their siblings. So these are the relationships that we see. So I think for you and I think this is one of the most attractive things about Peter films, that we get to see all this sibling relationship, because as you might have noticed, if you have been listening to the podcast, we are very close as siblings. We call each other soulmates. We are Gabby and I, and we have invited our sister Adriana a few times to participate. There's no hiding that. We are four siblings. We are three sisters and one brother, and we are very, very close. So that's why I say I'm taking it to a personal place, because I enjoy this movie a lot because of it is about the relationship between these siblings and how each of them, despite being so close and so loving with each other, handles the external pressures differently. Mm-hmm. Because you can see it in every family, like how did our sister Adriana handle the external pressures? She was feeling the external pressures, but she was much better adapting to those external pressures. And she became an engineer, for example, where myself, I did not respond well to the external pressures because I see myself very much in Emily. I could not repress my desires and my own identity. So I struggled a lot when growing up because I couldn't hide there are people who are able to do that, like Charlotte. Charlotte had a huge interior world as well. She wrote Jane Eyre. I mean, one of the masterpieces of literature, right? She obviously had a whole world of literature inside of her, but externally, she was able to conform much more. She became a teacher. We are two moms recording, and there's going to be sounds from the house. So apologies for that. it's okay. So what I wanted to say, Charlotte, she had a whole world of imagination inside it, but she was able to externally conform much more. She was a teacher. She tried to get Emily to be a teacher at the same school. And she was always kind of fighting with Emily, like, can you behave? Can you... like she was, like you said, she was bothered. She couldn't handle Emily's oddness, right? Because, and then we have Brownwell, who's the male, who's the boy. Well, not the boy. He was older than the two, the Charlotte and Emily. But he was also a free spirit. But he was much more lost than his two sisters. He wanted to first be a painter, that didn't work out. Then he wanted to be a writer, that didn't work out. In the end, we see that he was kind of like a lost soul, where Emily actually could realize what he could not. And then for Anne, she's the least represented in the movie, the younger one, but she's just kind of absorbing everything from her siblings and just being there, supporting them all, kind of try to be a bridge between all of them.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it in it. She's a little bit more neutral and she's kind of trying to keep the balance because she's aware of how different the other two combinations are. But then just touching on what you've mentioned, when you say the siblings' relationship portrayed in the film, and of course, taken from the real lives of the Bronte siblings, I love it that you took it to the personal, on the personal level, because of course, I also thought of that when I was watching the film. I also thought of us, because we are also three sisters and a brother.
Yeah.
And we're also different, actually.
Yeah.
And how we interact with each other is also different.
Yeah.
Of course. And of course I saw you and I in the relationship of Emily and Brownwell, how they kind of mentally connected.
Yeah, they fed each other's dreams and fantasies.
Oh my gosh, this scene where they go on the prairie and they take...
No, go ahead. I have something for that.
And they take these drops of opium elixir and they just roll down the slope and they just lay there gazing at the sky and the clouds and feeling the fresh air and the wind and... Just experiencing nature and just daydreaming and just connecting.
Yeah.
Connecting mentally.
Yeah. You know what that reminded me? That scene that you're describing is one of, the whole movie is very good. It's beautiful and evocative, but that scene is great because he comes back and they go out and they take the opium and they're like, ooh, having a great time. And then she realizes that he has something written in his forearm, and what's written is freedom of thought. And he tells her, come on, you have to say it and you have to scream it. Freedom of thought. And at the beginning, she's having a hard time. She's somebody's going to hear, but they're outside in the moors. Nobody's going to hear. It's like, go ahead, say it loudly. Say it again. Freedom of thought. And then she finally screamed, freedom of thought. And you know, these make me think. Listeners, you can go back to our very first episode, season one, episode one, when Gabby and I were little. We used to live in a 14-floor apartment, and we were dreaming like Bramwell and Emily constantly. We used to play with an atlas and just travel to the countries with our fingers. Truly, we were growing up in Maracaibo, and we just dreamed of somewhere else. And we used to travel with our fingers through the atlas together. But then also, we used to sit in our bedroom window, which was, 14th floor, and we used to scream, I want to live. I want to live. And Gabby, this scene.
It was made for us.
This one scene with Bramwell and Emily is us.
It's us.
This is for all the young, honestly, we are separated by 150 years, 180 years almost from this, right? But this is for the young people who see beyond the horizon, like Jenner said, I want to be able to see beyond the horizon. This is for all the young people who have ever dreamed of something different, but feel confined by their surroundings, by their traditions, by their families. It's an universal message of young people trying to find who they are while being buried in traditions and expectations. It's just, I love that scene. And it was like, this is Gabby and I forever.
Totally, Nene. And I'm very glad that we talked about it and then we can share the thought because I thought of exactly the same.
There you go.
Absolutely, exactly the same. Absolutely. And maybe this is also the magic of the film, that it is so well done also from the technical point of view. As we mentioned, the screenplay is spotless. The depiction of Emily Bronte, even though it's fictional, depiction of as a character is completely consistent. It's a very round character. And all of that is accomplished even more through the entire surrounding. As I say, all the technical aspects. I would say the entire cinematography of the film. Is so well done that exactly conveys that feeling that when these two siblings, when Emily and Bramwell are standing on the moors and you are seeing their faces and they are screaming freedom of thoughts, when Emily really screams it out, I got goosebumps. I heard it. It echoed. And it echoed because Bramwell was screaming. But once you see Emily screaming, it echoes even more. And I think this is such a skillful play in the technique of sound editing and how they built in all these elements. I mean, they're outside. They're in the nature. There's wind. There's... clouds and whatever, and she still screams, and you still hear the echo. This is just amazing, and the entire symbolism, of course. that her words echoed. Oh. I was completely baffled.
Oh my God. And then her words echo for centuries afterwards.
For centuries, exactly. Exactly. So then this takes me maybe to the next topic of discussion. I already gave you already a little bit of a hint how I found it. How did you like, or what are your thoughts on the entire production of the film? As I said, this is the very first directorial work of Frances O'Connor. How do you find the compilation of all these elements of costume design, production, on sound and music, please.
I think it's excellent. I have no notes to give. It's first of all, it's there's the thing with every time you talk about the Brontes, the landscape becomes very important, like the outdoors, and this is very much an outdoor movie. So all the scenes that take place outside are masterful. I mean, I want to talk about sound later on, but for me, the sound design of this movie, the sound design, talking about the combination of music, dialogue, ambient sounds, all of that is impeccable. It's truly storytelling with sound, because there's a lot that happens in the outdoors, and the wind, the sound of the wind is an important...
The sound of the rain.
And the rain is... Yeah, thank you. Are two very important sounds throughout the movie that really put you in, you know, really takes you to that very specific place where they were living. Yorkshire, right? I believe it's the place. Yeah, so in that aspect, I think it's beautiful. The costumes, I found that they don't draw attention to themselves, which I love. I love that they are, you know, they feel real. They feel worn. They feel normal. They, you know, the whole costume design is not done to kind of like... There are movies where that is the choice. Like we spoke about the new Emma in, I think the 2020 Emma, where it was a very conscious choice that the costumes kind of draw attention to themselves a little bit. Where here, no. Here, they're very much a part of a world that feels lived in. I love that. Everything. I was just looking at, you know, the bedrooms and the furniture. I was lost in the time. I was just lost in the moment where, you know, seeing those bed frames. It's just, you see the little details and you can imagine how it felt. Oh my God, must be cold when you touch that bed.
Cold and damp.
When you touch that bed frame at night before you go to bed, or, you know, it felt, there's a couple scenes where they're doing dishes.
Oh my God, I loved it because the dish water was dirty.
Yes.
I loved it. I loved to see them doing the dishes and you saw the water was already.
They did the German style, right? Where they fill up the sink.
Yeah.
They did it German style, not North America. Because in North America, we let the water flow.
Style, maybe.
Yeah,
exactly.
So in North America, we let once we put soap on the dishes, we rinse them under running water. But not in Germany because, correct me if I'm wrong, because they need to save water. So they fill up the sink and they rinse inside the sink.
Exactly. But now if you see it at the Brontes, I would say it's not, maybe not a German thing. It's an European thing.
It's an European thing.
But I love that detail. I love that detail. And that's also the magic of the entire film. Through such small details, they take you so well into this time.
Yeah.
They put you in the moor. You feel the wind, you feel the rain, you feel the cold, you feel the dampness, you feel the cold water in the sink.
Yeah.
You smell the cake. There's one scene when she bakes a cake.
it is not a perfect cake.
It didn't turn out very well because she was not in the best condition to make a cake.
That detail was so brilliant. Where the cake is not
so
perfect.
Brilliant.
The cake is not perfect. The cake comes out lopsided. And it's such a brilliant detail. Yeah, so those details, like the sink with the cold water, and it's just very realistic. But it's not an ugly film. You know, sometimes they try to make the past very ugly and like undesirable
and dirty.
No. There's some movies that try to look the past, make like people are like savages. I don't know what they're trying to do, but no. It's just
Yeah, and you know what makes me cherish even more the entire look and the entire feeling and the entire atmosphere of the entire film? What makes me value it even more, that we have just recently spoken about the film The Wonder.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel transported in the time. It was objectively a very well done film. And objectively, the scenery, the indoor scenery, the outdoor scenery was technically all super good, but I didn't really feel transported 100% into the time. While here with Emily, it happened immediately. I felt immediately I was there.
Yeah.
I was there. I was in Yorkshire. I was in the moor. I felt the cold. I felt the rain.
and I wonder what it is.
I smelled this. Yeah. And this is why I think the all the technical aspects of this film, they were fulfilled to 100%.
Yeah. It's beautiful to look at. Yeah, it's very well edited. And I think before we go to the next question, I think it's worth mentioning the soundtrack is all, most of it, I think, is piano music, which is, of course, period appropriate. Emily was a piano player. She plays very well. So she plays a couple of pieces. So you are really kind of in the time, like this is the sounds that they would have heard. It's kind of traditional. Okay, let's see. It's kind of like a very classical period film, but at the same time, it's not. At the same time, it's very innovative, right? It's hard to explain.
Yeah.
Because it is a beautiful, that is in the sense that it pays attention to all this world building details, like to make it feel like they're not trying to play with anachronisms or anything like that. This is not part of the story. But at the same time, it's very innovative. Like the character feels so fresh, so real, right?
Without falling into the exceptional girl.
Yeah, without falling into the exceptional girl.
The exceptional girl phenomenon. Nene, I agree. It's innovative in many ways, which is difficult to pinpoint. Okay? And I think one of the things that maybe contribute to that feeling that we think, okay, it's so innovative, is again, and I will mention it again now from my side, is the sound editing.
Yeah.
If you have watched the film, to the listeners, you will realize that there, as Nene mentioned before, the elements play a big role: a wind, rain,
trees,
nature, and so on.
Birds.
Trees, birds, and whatever, birds chirping, whatever. And there's a few scenes where the sound is either leveled up, where you only hear wind or rain or something else, or where the sound is completely muted, which I found gorgeous. And this is one of maybe the things, from in my opinion, that would contribute to this innovative aspect of the film. There's a sequence where Emily goes with her sister Charlotte to Brussels to study. And there's a few things happening. And this entire sequence, you see them moving, eating, whatever, walking up the stairs and so on. And the entire scene is muted. There's no sound. There's no sound, no music, which I found it really puts you like, focus on what's going on. There's the scene where Emily sits at the window and she cannot really start. She wants to start writing, but she cannot really start. So she opens the window and you hear the crackling of the wooden window. And then I had the feeling that I was smelling. And then you hear the breeze of the night, the breeze through the trees coming to her window. It's impeccable. And of course, the third one, which is maybe one of the most iconic scenes at the beginning of the film, where the new vicar of the village, Mr. Waitman, is giving his first predict at the church, and he talks about rain. And he talks about rain. And you then see Emily listening to his words, and he keeps on talking about rain. And suddenly she doesn't hear him, but just the rain. She hears the rain.
Yeah.
She hears the rain. Yeah. So I think all this playing with sounds and music, and I think it was, it plays another role
in
the entire film. For me, the entire plays another role.
Oh, God.
Go ahead. You had a thought before.
Oh, my God. I'm nodding and nodding and clapping. Excuse me. I'm clapping, I'm nodding with everything that Gabby's saying, because 100%. I think we have uncovered one of the things that really makes this movie exceptional, in that sense that the sound design is very much part of the storytelling. And when you said that, when she's in Brussels, the thing is, Charlotte was a good teacher. She was able to work as a teacher. She was invited to go and tutor other girls because of her experience, references, and Emily could not. And the whole sequence where it's muted is the silence inside her head. She cannot let her imagination talk. She's muting herself. Oh, my God.
Very good, Nene. I didn't feel it.
She's
very
muting.
Good thought.
Because I had taken notes, and there's a couple of really memorable scenes in this movie. So there's this one thing that scene. Okay. There's this one scene that we need to talk about briefly, and it's one of the best in the whole movie. And it's a scene that takes place at night with all the siblings and the vicar, who's very young and handsome and becomes Emily's love interest later on. And they're playing with a mask that their parents have received during their wedding night. And they hardly ever play with it. But this night, they are being very mischievous. And after the grown-ups have gone to sleep, the kids... the young ones stay up around the table playing a game. So they put the mask on and they have to play a role, and the other ones have to guess. And everybody's like playing characters, Marie Antoinette, just historical characters. But then it's Emily's turn, and she puts the mask on, and very soon she has the whole table enthralled with her story. Because she's sounding more and more like their dead mother, who they haven't seen for many, many years, because she actually passed away when Emily was, I think, 3 years old. Very,
correct.
Very little. But she's playing this role so well that they soon start saying, Mama? Mother? And they actually start asking her questions. And it's such an extraordinary scene, because Frances O'Connor plays with sound once again. She plays with light. It's masterfully done, because it's like we see behind her, it's like all black, and we only see the mask, and we see the scared faces of the siblings, and suddenly there's a window that opens and there's the wind. It's just an extraordinary, scary, like very much like a Wuthering Heights or general kind of mood, gothic. Like, this is the gothic in the movie. And very much sound and light play a role here.
Absolutely, Nene, absolutely. And also behind the, around the entire table, yeah, it's all dark. And it gets even darker and darker, slightly darker the more she talks like the mother. Absolutely masterful. And it's certainly one of the highlights of the entire film. Because it's incredibly breathtaking. And you as a viewer also get kind of spooked out, because you also start kind of doubting, is she still playing a role, or is she being somehow possessed by the mother?
Yeah. The note I took when I was watching this scene is that this scene plays a role in showing us Emily's character, so it's part of character development, but also kind of like showing us who the Brontes were. These were people who let themselves be taken away by stories. Like, they allowed like, it's about the power of storytelling. It's so much about the powers of stories and how they allow themselves be swallowed by them. Because Emily lives in a story. Anne lives in a story. Brownwall as well. They live in their own stories that they're creating all the time. And this scene, they all kind of got swallowed up by this moment, this story. And it's about how they live in their own imaginations. And their imaginations are so powerful. And they, in the end, they created masterpieces of literature because of the imagination and their intellect and their knowledge and their ability to tell the stories and make them believable. I think that that's why that scene is so powerful as well. Oh,
I'm nodding myself here as well. I agree, Nene. It's a beautiful way to see that scene. I totally agree. They were storytellers, the Bronte siblings. Yeah. They were storytellers. Yeah. And of course, they also could identify very well a well-told story. And in that moment, Emily was telling them a very good story.
Very good story.
They fell for it completely. It's amazing. Now we have completely delved in this marvelous story, even though we know Emily Bronte since centuries, or a couple of decades. Funnily enough, and maybe I'm making a mistake, but funnily enough, this is the first time that somebody takes the effort of putting not the work she created, but putting her, Emily Bronte, on the focus of a story. And I may sound a little bit cliche here, Nene, but isn't it amazing that it took a woman to recognize this and mm-hmm. make the story of Emily Bronte to come on screen?
Oh, 100%. There's been, yeah, 100. This is a constant theme in our podcast that we're talking with, you know, once again, we chose a movie made by a woman, but because there have been numerous documentaries and smaller documentaries, bigger, small one, but not a feature film about mm-hmm. Emily Bronte. And he had to take a woman who wasn't a director. This is her directorial debut. To be able to tell this very, very important story. Like, there's no, mm-hmm. like, and I'm so happy she was the one who did it, because she had the skill. I mean, she's a veteran actress who has worked in period film, and she spoke a lot when she was doing the press tour that she was obsessed with Emily Bronte since she was very, very young. So it kind of took somebody who was very, very seasoned, somebody who really knew this literary character to do such a film. So I'm happy it's her who did it. But again, it took a woman. Just same like the movie Belle.
Correct.
It took a black director, a black female director, to do a movie about this black character in the 18th century. Nobody else had taking it upon themselves to do a movie about this. And this is what we say over and over, that we need every voice. We need every voice in art, in books, in film, in writing, in everywhere. You need all the voices so that you can find these characters that speak to you, where you see, like, it's astonishing that nobody had done a movie about Emily Bronte before.
I am very thankful to Frances O'Connor.
Oh, me too.
Very, very thankful.
Me too. Yeah, me too. Amazing.
Absolutely. And I take off my hat. She did a wonderful job. As I said, it is hard to make something based on so little information and so little facts. And I think what she created, the vision she created, is very plausible. And yeah.
Yeah.
Swept me.
Yeah. And let's say something before for people who are listening. If you watch the movie, you know there's a lot of topics that we didn't touch on that could be a bit controversial, like a love story. But I guess we can leave that for another time. Okay, so Gabby, after that discussion where we gush a lot about this movie, why don't we move on to our Weeks and Candles quiz? So for everybody who's listening now, we introduce a new quiz for season 3. Where we ask 4 questions to each other and we answer. So the first question for the wigs and candles quiz is, Gabby, what is your sweaty wig? One thing you didn't like about the movie.
Nene, I thought about this and I have my answer. I don't have to hesitate.
Okay.
Nene, there is a love story in the entire scene. In the entire film, excuse me, the entire film. There is a love story. We don't know, of course, if this is based slightly on true facts. We don't know. But anyhow, this is part of the film. This vicar who comes new to the village and who works with the pastor, Bronte, he is kind of controversial. At the beginning, he was kind of interested in the Bronte sisters, but then he was like distracted by other women, by a visitor. So Emily, from the very beginning, was very skeptical about this man. She really couldn't really pinpoint him. She had her doubts. Is it really true? So can he be trusted or whatever? But the more they got to know each other, the father of Emily put him to teach her French with the hope that he could kind of tame her somehow, you know. And during these French lessons, of course, they got to know each other a little bit more and they got to talk more. And one day she had a poem in her dress and she dropped it by mistake in the classroom, and they had a discussion and she left the classroom abruptly and he picked up the poem, and it was a very hot poem for the time, for the Victorian time, and he got flushed and flustered. He was like, oh my gosh. So he started changing towards Emily, and through time, they develop a love affair, yeah, and they become lovers. So here's my sweaty week. They became lovers, and at some point, he distances himself from Emily in a very bad way. And this betrayal of the vicar Waitman, it was like a knife through my heart. And how he despicably rejected Emily in such a cruel way. So my sweaty wig in this film is nothing less than the betrayal of Vicar Waitman on Emily Bronte. If it's true or fictional, it was too bad. Very wrongdoing.
He does pay for his betrayal.
He pays the good way for his betrayal.
Oh my God! How often, this is terrible. How often is that the sweaty wig is a male character? We apologize. They're usually the villain, and we apologize. They're usually the villain. that's a very good sweaty week. That's a very good sweaty week because it was quite painful. It's actually very, very painful the way he did that. And it was very selfish. It was because he wanted to keep his good name.
Which is so mean towards women, of course. We're talking about Victorian times. Again, he said, you are ungodly. So he again was giving Emily the guilt. He was saying, you are responsible for bringing me into doom, yep, because now we had an extra marital affair under sin, and you are responsible because you wooed me because you are ungodly.
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, the worst
rage.
Absolutely. Yeah, that you tempted me. You made me fall from my altar or whatever. Yeah, you tempted me. So I'm no longer perfect or clean because of you. Mm-hmm. He had no guilt in the matter. He had no, no responsibility. Yeah, that's a good, that's a very good sweaty wig.
Do you have a sweaty wig?
It was very hard, but it's related, appropriately, it's related to hair, my sweaty wig.
You know, there were wigs in this film.
There were no wigs. But my sweaty wig is related to hair.
Go ahead.
Emily wears her hair down a lot. And this is not correct. If I've learned anything from all the costume historians I watch on YouTube, is that this is not realistic. Emily would have worn her hair up anytime she was outside of the house. But you know what? It didn't bother me as much. I really had to dig deep to find a sweaty wig because it's actually very, like the movie, like the word I used before was coherent. It's kind of coherent with the character and the wind and all that. Like it doesn't feel out of place, but it's the only tiny, tiny sweaty wig that I could find. But I understand.
I agree, Nene.
Yeah, you have to. But in this case, like in other cases, I see the intention is to make the character more relatable to modern audiences or more attractive and so on. In this movie, this is not the motivation. I can see it really as a character building motivation, like it's a more like an inner motivation than making the character appeal to modern audiences, which is what many movies, that's their sin, right? That they're trying to make the characters appear more modern, relatable, more attractive, like they have their hairdos look more like ours so they don't look silly and so on. Here it feels more motivated by, you know, the inner tempest that she had inside of her all the time, and having her hair down is like a reflection of that. So it's not as bad.
Yes, I agree. I also spotted that, but I also looked over it because I said, okay.
Yeah,
I'm gonna accept this.
It was more appropriate to the character and to the what is always happening inside of her in a way, yeah.
And maybe also to kind of have this play with the wind, you know, because we talk the elements play such a role. Maybe she also wanted to portray through her hair, like all this play with the elements, with rain coming down her hair. And
you know what?
Maybe.
And it feels coherent, artistically coherent.
Coherent, yes.
It feels artistically coherent, like it fits. Like she took liberties with the facts, right? She took liberties, she imagination. So this kind of fits as well with this whole, you know, this is not a biographical movie with all the fact or historical, but it's an imaginary telling. Okay, so let's move on to the second question. So what is your shining candle, one thing you love about the movie?
Well, Nene, there's too many things. I'm just going to go intuitively with the entire music score and sound editing. I thought it was amazing. And something that I hadn't really seen or at least appreciated consciously in any other film. I think that...
Well, Gabby...
That was really good.
We are...
And this is just one. I would have like 10 shining candles, but I'm going to keep it short and just going to mention that one. How about you?
Oh, we are Bramwell and Emily once again.
And
we are Charlotte and Emily. We are the Bronte sisters once again, because that was my shining candle too. It was the sound design. It was how the sound plays such an important storytelling role in this movie. I loved it. I was immersed. It's poetic. It's romantic. It's so well done. And it's the most evocative and beautiful sounds. Rain, wind, birds, the morning dew, the morning sounds, the evening sounds. You know, the connection with nature. I think this is a truly romantic film. People often think about romanticism in terms of romantic couples' love, but romanticism speaks about, you know, the freedom of the soul. The romantic artists identify with nature a lot and the grandiosity of nature and the sublime, which is like something so grand and spectacular that you cannot comprehend it, and it can be scary as well because it's so large and so like the ocean, like a tempest in the ocean, or a stormy sky, like nature representing your inner feelings. And this movie very much uses nature this way, where nature represents the inner feelings of the characters in the most classic romantic, like, not classic, like the movement classic, but no, like romanticism romantic. And I love that because absolutely. I was born in that, like, I am from that time.
You just confess it right now.
I'm just going to come out. I'm not from this time. I'm from 1830s. Just letting you know right now, that's my time. That's me. The nature. So rain, wind, beautiful. Just so well done.
Beautiful.
My shining candle. Okay. Beautiful.
Totally.
Let's go to the third question. Stolen costume. What piece of clothing or prop would you like to keep from Emily?
Okay, let's see if we match our answers again. I would like to have the desk of Emily Bronte in front of the window. I'm not taking a dress this time, even though the costumes were amazing. I'm taking her little desk with her quill and her ink and the little window. And I want the tree also standing in front of the window. I want that. I want exactly that corner for my house. Please, go ahead. What is... If you can take a piece of clothing or prop from this film, what would it be?
I can't believe it. I'm going to steal your prop. That is mine too, buddy. I also want her desk. Unbelievable. This is us being the Brontes. We are the Brontes.
No way.
We are soulmates from that Bronte. That's what I need, Gabby. As you know, as some people might know, listening to this podcast, I want to be a writer. I write. On the side, and I want that desk as well. I want the desk in front of the window, and I want to open
in front
it,
of the window.
And I want to work there. I want that to be my workspace. It's magical. It's extraordinary. And the thing is that that's her writing spot, and she opens the window, and she is like she's bathed in the sound. Mm-hmm. It's like she's bathing in the evening sky. Uh-huh. Like she's bathing
and in the moonlight
and the mm-hmm. moonlight and the birds, and then Charlotte later on sits at the same desk and the same, and she opens the window as well. So it's kind of like the spot for all writers, all creatives to kind of sit down to let their creativity and their soul kind of be free. Oh my God, that's what I'm taking too. So we're gonna have to fight over it.
We're gonna have to take turns.
We will take turns. but if we can split, like when you're using that, I can also take one thing. She has this hat. Mm-hmm. Emily has this beautiful hat. Very 1830
Victorian.
Yeah, very Victorian, which is round and the ink is brown, very, very starched, very, very perfectly starched, very rigid, and inside has like these two flowers on the inside. So pretty. So yeah, while you're at the desk, I can use the hat, and then you can use the hat while I use the desk.
Okay, it's a deal. I love the hats as well. The hats were amazing.
All the hats. All right. Okay, let's finish this questionnaire, this quiz with the last question. Gabby, if given the chance, would you time travel to the period?
Undoubtedly, yes. And we're going to take hopefully I can take you with me when I time travel. We're going to take the train together.
Yeah.
To Yorkshire,
yeah.
To the moors. I want to feel the rain on a woolen dress. I don't want like outdoor polyester clothing. I want a woolen dress that gets like drenched. I want the wind in my hair. I want my shoes in the moors. I want to go into the damp little cottage. I want a fire. I want to feel the creepiness of this entire gothic genre that they created, the Brontes.
Yeah.
I want to be there. I need it. I want to be there. I time travel. How about you?
Oh, I will 100% will go to 1830s England or Europe. And yes, I will go to the Moors. I will also go to Paris because you could hear Chopin in person. I'm just going to leave it at that. You could go to a salon and actually see and hear Chopin in person. Can you imagine that?
Can you imagine? Okay, please take me with you.
I'm going to take you. So we're going to take the train back and then a ship, and then we're going to go listen to Chopin in person.
In Paris. Okay.
And maybe we can bump into George Sand. Who knows? There you go. So yeah, absolutely I go. And I will bring the hat.
Okay.
Okay. But can you imagine if you bump into the Brontes as well? Can you imagine the conversations?
Oh my gosh, can you imagine the conversations? Oh my gosh. Maybe, I would be speechless.
And maybe be a friend to Emily. Like maybe you would be the one friend that understands her.
I would love to run down the slope with her.
Me too. Run down, talk, scream.
Run down the
scream
talk.
At the wind.
I would take the opium.
I would take the opium too. We didn't talk about this, but there's two movies in a row where people have been taking drugs. Maybe this should be like a topic for a next episode. Like we have seen two movies in a row where people are taking drugs to kind of escape,
right.
to escape mm-hmm. their surroundings. But anyway, we have gone quite long. We obviously love this movie. So to wrap it up, what we need to do is do our Wicks and Candles rating. Our Wicks and Candles rating is from 1 to 10. 1 is a very sweaty week. 10 is all the Wicks and Candles. So Gabby, how many Wicks and Candles do you give Emily by Frances O'Connor?
This won't be a surprise. I'm going to give it a 10. And we have been talking about a lot of films in our podcast series, and we have very few 10s. Mm-hmm. And this is going into that category. I'm going to give it a 10 because, as I said, there's nothing that I didn't like about this film. Emma Mackey, as I said, she's rather young. She was born in 1996. She has a brilliant future ahead of her. She is just outstanding. Outstanding. The choice of cast, the choice of landscape, setting, this is screenplay. We talked a lot about music score, sound editing, etc. Absolutely everything. It's a flawless film in my eyes.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah, I was between 9 and 10. I have no reason to give it a 9. Maybe if I watch it again, I'll give it a 9 because of, I don't know. I don't even know why I would give it a 9. I think it deserves a 10. Is the script is beautiful. Technically, it's flawless. The performances are beautiful. Even the love scenes, which we didn't touch on at all, are beautifully done. It's very evocative in every way. All the performances are really beautiful, compelling, well done. Emma Mackey, like you said, she's somebody to keep an eye on because she was born in 1996. Oh my God.
1996.
Oh my God. Somebody from the 90s. She's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. And her face is so expressive. It's just, I agree. I agree. I give it a 10.
Yeah. As I said, if we really dig into it, what would justify a 9 or an 8?
Nothing. I don't think so. I mean, we could come watch again and see, but no, nothing. It's a truly perfect period film. And it does.
Exactly. And maybe this is also the cherry on the top, Nene, that for period film lovers,
yeah.
This has everything. This has a very good plot. This has good performances. The atmosphere of the entire film, the setting, it has like all the elements for period film lovers there.
Yeah, a love story, the conflict between the person and society. It has like every element
society.
That you look for.
It has every element.
It does illuminate the life of women at a different time. In how they dealt with it. So it does have something to say about it as well. So I think he checks all the boxes.
It checks all these boxes. And just maybe one last sentence. The very first love scene between Emily and the vicar in the cottage, in this dark cottage, it was a good scene. And I especially liked how they showed all the layers that he had to take off Emily, because he would take off the skirt, then the petticoat, then the and they also played with the sound. You could hear really the ribbons opening up and the corset opening up. Yeah, you could really hear the fabric against fabric, you know, opening and all these layers, underwear and underpants and socks and stockings. And you said the key word, it was, the entire film is very evocative, and I think that's a very hard credential for
people. Yeah, that's the best credential. It really takes you there. But it takes you there, but it has something to say about the time as well, which is what I want. Like, I want to learn something about the spirit of people at the time, right? That's what I'm looking for. But anyway, okay, so Emily gets 20 out of 20. Excellent. So again, Gabby, thank you so much for this discussion. I love this movie. We obviously loved it. Thank you for talking about it with me. It's been amazing.
Thank you as well, Nene, for bringing up the right topics and the right insights. And I, of course, this is my biggest joy to to share my passion and my love for period films with you.
Yeah, and to everybody who's listening, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for supporting our podcast. We hope you enjoyed it, and we see you soon.
Thank you. Stay tuned. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wicks and Candles is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
So go ahead and subscribe and follow us on Instagram at Wicks and Candles. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.
Wicks and Candles is written, hosted, and produced by Andreina Romero and Gabriela Morken Romero. The image design is by Pamela Rollin. The podcast theme music is the Concerto for Two Violins in D minor by Johann Sebastian Bach.